Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight, my guest is a two-time breast cancer survivor. She is Kathleen O'Keefe Canavos. Am I saying that correctly, Kathleen?
You are saying that correctly, David, and I'm actually a three-time breast cancer survivor now.
Oh, my. Well, Kathleen has just come out with a book that is already on the international bestseller list. It's called Surviving Cancer Land, The Intuitive Aspects of Healing. Now, she was born to a military family, raised in Europe, and graduated from Munich International High School in Germany. She has a degree in special education from Keene Teachers College in Keene, New Hampshire, and she taught special education for 10 years in psychology at the University of South Florida. As I've said, she is a breast cancer survivor three times around, and you can go to her website, which is www.survivingcancerland.com. She is an agent and author represented by Scoville, Gallen, and Gauch Literary Agency, and that is remarkable to get an agent these days. God knows I've tried. She's an inspirational speaker, a phone counselor for R.A. Block Cancer Foundation, mentor for the We Can, a self-help group. She contributes to Cape Woman online magazine, Twitter's C4 Women's, Colette Baron Reed's Intuition Now, Examiner.com National, The Guided Path, Examiner.com Chicago Self-Awareness Examiner, Writer's Digest Community, Scriblerati. She's a guest contributor to author Carolyn Howard Johnson's Shring with Writer's Blog Spot, NCCS, the National Wellness Community Online Support Blog, and Discussion Groups, Cancer Advocacy, and Now Blog Site. She's a member of International Reiki Blog and Website, the Association of Cancer Online Resources, which is ACOR, Blogger and Web Chat, NBCC, which is the National Breast Cancer Coalition, Journal and Blogger, USA Today, Community Blog, LinkedIn, linked to Health at HealthcareWhisper.com, and other organizations, too, where she's a volunteer. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Kathleen. How are you tonight?
Well, thank you, David. That was an amazing introduction. You know, my life has been changing so quickly since this book was published that if you go to my website at www.survivingcancerland.com, you'll see an update to my bio because I'm actually now a columnist for two online magazines, and everything seems to be changing daily. So thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Well, you certainly have been a very active person in so many different arenas, and I'm sure it's been wonderful for your own recovery as well as the recovery of others to be involved in support groups and online magazines for women and so on and so forth. This is almost a national epidemic. Breast cancer is a virulent disease. It's killed many people that I've known, including my own dear sister, who died at the age of 32. And she went to the doctor at the age of 26 complaining about problems, and she was told not to worry, just desist. And 6 months later, she went back, and by then it was too late. So, you know, it's very important to do self-exams and to not discount somebody when they say that they've got a pain in their breast. So I'd like to ask you, Kathleen, what did you think and feel when you received your first cancer diagnosis?
Well, it was a strange diagnosis, David, because it started out in a dream. My dreams diagnosed the cancer that the doctors had missed. And for your listeners listening in, I just want you to know that the interesting background noises you may hear is from a Marouge cafe house that I'm sitting in up in the high desert in Yucca Valley. And so they're listening to me actually doing your radio show, David, and everybody's sitting around watching me. So it's really interesting, and they know exactly who you are and the title of your book as well. But getting back to cancer statistics, you know, David, right now, one in two men will come down with cancer at some point in their life. So that means if you're sitting in a room right now with a number of people, look at the person beside you. If it's a man, chances are one of the two of you will get cancer. And right now the statistics rose from one in six women to one in three. So
wow.
If you are with a group of women and there are three of you sitting together, one of you is going to come down with some form of cancer in your lifetime. Now, in my case, I had gone in for my yearly mammogram, you know, blood test, physical exam, like we're told we should do to ensure that we're healthy. And my doctor told me I was healthy and to go home, congratulations, you know, you're everything you want to be. And I started to have these recurrent prophetic nightmares that told me I had breast cancer. I actually had my spirit guides who are dressed like Franciscan monks, step through a pop-up in my dream, just like a pop-up on your computer. You know, you get those pop-ups and you can't get them off your computer. Well, the same thing would happen in my dream. And the dream that I was dreaming, my epic dream, was free. It would just stop. And my guide would walk through this pop-up, and he took my hand, and he placed it on my breast, and he said, "Do you feel that?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "You have breast cancer. You go back to your doctor tomorrow, and you tell him you need a separate set of tests, different set of tests from just mammograms." So I did, David. I went back to my doctor. He did another mammogram. He did another blood test. He did another physical exam. And he said, "You're healthy. Go home." And so I did. And these recurrent nightmares with these pop-ups in my guides continued for 3 months. And they sent me back to my doctor three different times. And finally, on the fourth time, when my spirit guide, dressed as this monk, came through the pop-up into my dream, as soon as I saw him, David, I started crying. And I said, "I know why you're here. If you want me to live, if I really do have breast cancer, help me do something because my doctors aren't listening." So what happened is he reached into his pocket and he pulled out this little white feather. And he took the feather and he handed it to me and he said, "If you return to your doctor tomorrow and you treat that feather as though it is a sword and you verbally fence with him, you're going to get the test you need, which is exploratory surgery. Nothing else will show this cancer." And so I took the feather in my mind, I put it in my own pocket, and the next day I actually returned to my doctor without an appointment. And when he saw me, he said, "Kathy, why are you back?" And I went into his office and I said, "You have got to listen to me. I need a different test. I need exploratory surgery." And he looked like he'd been shot, David. And he goes, I can't do that. That's against hospital policy. It's against my policy. It's against your health. You could come down with an infection. There are complications with anesthesia. I just can't do that. I can't cut you open because you want me to. And so I imagined taking that feather out of my pocket, the feather that my guide had given me, and I imagined pointing it at him. And I said, you have to listen to me. I don't know where else to go. I know something is wrong. I may not have symptoms that you can that I can describe, but I'm having nightmares. And it was almost like somebody had glimmered him, you know, like these vampire movies that we see. And mm-hmm. he looked at me and he said, okay. And he went out in the other room. He scheduled exploratory surgery. And to make a long story short, when pathology received the tumor that was found in the surgery that did not show up on mammograms and could not be felt, I was in stage 2 cancer with it in my lymph nodes.
Oh, my God. Wow. Amazing.
So that
amazing
was,
story.
That was a prophetic dream that diagnosed the cancer.
Mm. Well, had you had experience with spirit guides before this?
I had. Growing up, occasionally I would see a dream where a spirit guide would come in, he would be walking with me in my dreams. I never really paid that much attention to it, but I'd never had pop-ups like that before. So that was different. It was like, it's like an emergency door, you know, the room between realms, and that emergency door popped open. And this Franciscan monk came through. And what's really interesting, David, is this past week I got an email from a nun who is part of the Franciscan community. She's a Franciscan nun. And she wanted to know why my spirit guides looked like monks. Was I a devout Catholic? Had I been raised a Catholic? And the answer is, I'm not truly an Episcopalian. If I had to describe myself as religious, I would be an Episcopalian. My parents were Catholic, but I have no idea why I had Franciscan monks come through that portal and not some talking rabbit. I have no idea.
Mm. Well, we can get into the spirit guides a little bit more later when I talk to you about your faith. And thank God you did have faith in your dream and that you took the action that you did. I think it's amazing that the doctor complied with your request. Let me ask you, go back to the question, what did you think and feel when you were confirmed that you had stage 2 cancer?
Well, it's funny that you should ask that, David, because I remember crying. I didn't want that to be confirmed, and at the same time I did, because I knew it was probably true. But once it was really confirmed, I just cried and cried and cried. And then I remember coming out of my crying gag, because my husband was in the recovery room with me, holding me in his arms and rocking me. And I remember thinking to myself, gosh, guys, you were right. The dreams were right. I need you now more than ever. Don't leave me. And I remember the same voice from my dream saying, we won't. And they never did.
Mm.
Because I ended up being, my dreams ended up diagnosing cancer 3 different times, and the doctors missed it every single time. Just goes to prove our nightmares, they're symptoms. When the doctors say, you're not having symptoms, so we can't give you a different set of tests, nightmares and inner guidance are symptoms. And by the time you start having physical symptoms, not emotional ones, but physical symptoms of pain with breast cancer, it can be too late. The same with just about any cancer. By the time you have physical symptoms, you're in big trouble.
Mm. Well, did any of the occasions of the diagnoses provoke a faith crisis for you?
Well, no, not really. I mean, the only crisis I had was which to believe, my dreams or my doctors. Because truth be told, I wanted to believe my doctors. Who wouldn't? I wanted to do backflips and say, oh, great, instead of being cut open the week after Christmas, I'd much rather go skiing in Aspen with the rest of my family. You know, they've rented a huge villa, and it's going to be party central, and instead I'm going to go in under the knife. Yeah, I would have much rather gone skiing, but I knew my guides would not be showing up like that in my dreams, giving me a feather defense list. But there wasn't a reason for them to be there. So that was the only crisis of faith I had. Did I have the faith in them or the faith in my doctors with their state-of-the-art tests?
Well, I can imagine that did provoke a real faith crisis in the medical establishment. Goodness gracious. Now, how amazed were the doctors when they found the cancer that they said didn't exist?
They were pretty darned amazed, and I kind of go into that in my book, because when the doctor finally said, well, okay, I'll schedule you for exploratory surgery, I remember saying, can we have an oncologist present? And my doctor looked at me and said, Kathy, you are way too young for cancer. It doesn't run in your family. You don't need an oncologist if I'm going to do the surgery. And I realized at that point that my chances of finding another doctor to do this surgery based on my dreams with no symptoms and all these perfect test results was very slim. So I didn't push the envelope anymore. But if I had, and if that doctor had read my book, he would have said, you know what, let's do an MRI. If there's something in the MRI, I'm going to refer you to an oncologist so that they can do a needle biopsy, and they would have known before they had to go in and do surgery exactly what they were dealing with. Because as it turned out, David, as soon as they realized it was cancerous, I had to get wheeled right back in within 2 weeks and have a second surgery so they could check my lymph nodes. And that's when they found it in the lymph nodes.
Hmm. How old were you when you had your first cancer?
I was 43.
Okay. Well, that doesn't seem too young. When do most women... Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well,
no,
I
wondered,
too young now.
What is the median age for developing breast cancer? Is there?
Well, that's just it. There isn't anymore, David. It used to be when women went through menopause. They were in their 50s, mm-hmm. they were in their 60s. But they're finding now that women are developing breast cancer in their 30s. And I really
mm-hmm.
believe it's because of all the growth hormones that have been in our
mm-hmm.
food for so long. The milk,
mm-hmm.
the meat, the chicken, and those growth hormones, which are estrogen-rich, are causing cancer. Because the cancers that the women are coming down with in their 30s are estrogen positive, the same as mine.
Yeah. My sister's was estrogen positive also.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can you tell us what kind of treatment you underwent?
Well, you know, it's interesting. People have asked me, well, why didn't you go and find holistic treatment? Why did you go back to the doctors and go with conventional treatment? And the answer to that is because my guides told me to go back to my doctors. They had faith in my doctors, or they would have said, go find Swami Wami Rama Lama Ding Dong, and I'd have done it. But they had faith in my doctors, and so I returned to my doctors. And now, with hindsight, all these many years later, three cancers later, I realized that it was because I had to teach the doctors as well. With cancer at an epidemic level, there has to be a change in the medical community. And when a patient returns and says, I know something is wrong, the doctors have to listen. And maybe one of the questions they need to start asking is, have you been having nightmares? Tell me about your anxiety attacks, because those are symptoms. And I'm actually an RA Block Cancer Foundation hotline counselor now, because I'm one of the few stage 4 recurrent cancer, people who can guide other people. But not very many of us survive. And so one of the things that I hear over and over and over again is, I knew something was wrong. I went back to my doctor. I was having anxiety attacks. I was having nightmares. And they kept giving me the same test and saying, you don't have any symptoms. Come back in 6 months. And when I returned in 6 months, I'm now in stage four. I'm terminal. It's in my bones. It's all over the place. And I'm dying. I hear that so often, David, that it's so upsetting. So I realized that what I needed to do was actually go into the hospital with my book and reeducate the medical community.
Well, you talked about stage four. You weren't applying that to yourself, were you?
Yes, I was. My second breast cancer that the doctors missed again was stage four, was a 9 by 11 centimeter tumor, and this was the chief of everybody at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute watching me.
Oh, my. So what's your prognosis at this point?
It's perfect.
Good.
That was more than 10 years ago.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize stage four people could go into remission.
Well, we do. We just say, you know, the world doesn't hear that much about us because there are so few of us. And for one thing, most doctors look at their stage four recurrent patients and say, well, you've got 6 months maybe. Go get your house in order. But I say, don't get your house in order. You have every possibility of living a very full life. You have an expiration date stamped somewhere on your body, but God's the only one that can read it. So keep on keeping on. And when they talk to another recurrent survivor who is stage four, you know, which is terminal, and they see that you've been alive for 10 years and that you're fine, you're not on any medications. I play tennis. I scuba dive. I go horseback riding. You know, I speak to large groups. I'm very active. When they hear that, it's like a breath of fresh air. It's like, if she did it, I can do it too. And I tell them, yes, you can.
Well, I think that's so important to be able to inspire hope in others, especially when you've been down that far and received that kind of diagnosis. Did you have mastectomies?
I did. I had a double mastectomy by choice. I decided after the second one that I had actually had enough. And it was at that point that we found the third cancer. The doctors did not want to do a double mastectomy in Boston. And my guides had told me I needed a double mastectomy. So I went to New York, and I got new doctors. And when they performed the double mastectomy, they found that the cancer, the recurrent cancer, was in the right breast, too. And that was a cancer that didn't even show up in the MRI. And so that was actually my three crabs dream that I had that told me I actually had I would have breast cancer three times. And it took 5 years for that dream to come true. And there it was. I kept wondering all the time, why three crabs in this dream? Why three crabs? I have it in my left breast. I have it in a lymph node. That must be two. And then when the recurrence came back, I thought, well, okay, stage four recurrence, and it was in the first breast, and it was in the lymph node. That's three. But then when they did the double mastectomy, there it was again. Three crabs, no doubt about it, no having to think twice about it, three different cancers. And not three different cancers, recurrence. And so, you know, dreams are amazing. And if we learn that dream language, it can save us a lot of grief. So that sent the doctors scurrying for the hills at that point, because here it was, three times they had missed it. Maybe once I can understand, twice, that's unacceptable, but three times, something's really wrong.
Right. You're not kidding. Well, what further treatment did you undergo after the surgeries or in between?
Well, you know, that's a great question, David, because one of the surgeries between the first and the second cancer was the doctors put me on tamoxifen, which is supposed to keep cancer from coming back for 5 years. But here's the problem. Unfortunately, right now in our medical community, they're doling out pills like candy and not checking for to see whether or not they're working or if there's repercussions from them. And what happens is often with tamoxifen, it stops working after 2 years. Now, I assumed with the blood tests that I was taking every 6 months that the doctors were checking my hormone levels. So if there had been a change in my hormone levels and the estrogen was building, they would know that the tamoxifen wasn't working. I mean, that's a pretty logical assumption, wouldn't you say?
I'd say so.
If somebody has diabetes and you're going to give them medication for that, you're going to check their blood levels to make sure it's working. If you're giving them insulin, you're just not going to give them insulin without checking the blood levels. So it turned out they weren't checking my blood levels for the increased estrogen. So I got a second hormone receptive cancer. And when I asked the doctors about that, they said, well, we know that tamoxifen stops working when the cancer comes back. And I said, are you even listening to yourself? You can't do that. Do you understand how dangerous that is? So for your audience that's listening, if you're on tamoxifen, you make sure you ask your doctor how he is checking your hormone level, because you don't want to get a second cancer to find out that tamoxifen stopped working.
Did you end up having an oophorectomy? Your ovaries removed?
I did a hysterectomy as well, because the tamoxifen can create tumors in the uterus. And I was past childbearing years, and I didn't want to deal with it. So what I did was I actually had what is referred to as like the roto-rooter, and if they just make little tiny incisions and just pull everything out. And it was a very, very easy surgery. And I didn't want to have to worry about that anymore. I wanted to be able to focus on helping other people. And, you know, there comes a point where you just don't want to worry anymore. And you just don't want to deal with taking any chances. You know, you put your trust in the medical community, and you trust that when they say, we're watching you, we'll know if something's wrong, you want to believe that, and then you find out it's not true. So you have to take your health in your own hands. And sometimes it means being extreme, but, again, that's one of the reasons why I'm actually taking this book to the medical community and saying, look, you know, there are some very easy changes that can be made in order for your patients to have a better chance of living a long and prosperous life.
Well, let's talk about your book now. First of all, what compelled you to write it, and what would you like to tell us about it?
Well, what compelled me to write the book was when I had the stage 4 breast cancer, the lobular, which is so dangerous. It's the one that you read about a lot in the newspapers. People usually pass in stage 2 because it's a liquid and it really is hard to find. Mine was in stage 4. And so what I decided at that point was that I had to go back into my dream journals and my journals that I kept while I was going through treatment. And Elizabeth Edwards had lobular cancer. And so a lot of people were following her during her treatments. And, you know, her ending was not a great one. And so I had stage 4 in the lobular. So I was scared out of my mind when I heard that I had that. So I went back into all of my journals, and I started to compile them into a book to help me survive this stage 4. And it worked. And when I did that, I said, you know what, I just can't keep this for myself. This is too powerful. This is too important. So I turned it into Surviving Cancer Land, Intuitive Aspects of Healing. And in that book, I show you, the reader, what the dream looked like that I had, how I broke it down, how I found the information I had, and how I applied it to my life and to my breast cancer treatment.
Well, what things do you talk about in your book that would be otherwise useful to patients who are undergoing treatment, surgery, diagnoses, things like that?
Well, it has things like how to change your diet, how to go mm-hmm. with a healthier diet, how to change from maybe eating the diet you were eating before to going to completely organic, especially eating hormone-free meat. It also tells the reader how to deal with hair loss, how to wear makeup to make yourself look good when you feel like you've been run over by a Mack truck, how to go out and find a wig that looks just like your hair before you lose it all, so that when you're going through treatment, you feel like you. It has all kinds of information in it that's helpful to anyone, not only just the people going through the treatment, but also their family members, their caregivers. And it also shows you how to take your dreams, because we are born with spirit guides and guardian angels. We are their job, and they really take that job seriously. So while you are going through treatment, I show you how to keep a dream journal. And I share meditations with the reader. And I help them through the frightening aspects of treatment by showing them what's going to happen so that you're not caught off guard, and how to get through the frightening parts. While you're going through treatment, you don't want to eat. To a large degree, you become anorexic. So by simply ordering appetizers if you go out to dinner, or knowing that if you are riding to the restaurant in a car and you suddenly realize you're getting nauseous, you can call up on your cell phone and ask the owner to pack up your dinner, and you just take it home and you sit in the bed and you eat it while you're watching TV, where you're not going to be embarrassed if you get physically ill in the restaurant, because that happened to me a couple times. You just don't know when that's going to happen.
Mm. Well, those are great suggestions. Is it too early to have received feedback to your book?
No, it's not too early at all. And in fact, the launch is still going on. So if you go to any of my Facebook pages, like Surviving Cancerland Aspects of Healing, or you go to my website, www.survivingcancerland.com, the launch page should be up there for the Amazon bestseller launch. And if you click on that and buy the book, you're eligible for $1,000 worth of free gifts. And people involved in my launch were Greg Braden, Dr. Bernie Siegel. So the gifts are amazing.
Now, is your book available in bookstores at this point?
It is. It's in Barnes & Noble. And, in fact, out here in the desert, out in the Palm Springs area, they've had to restock it 3 times. Well, we've got Gilda's Club out here, so as soon as everybody heard the book was in the store, they would go and not only buy a book for themselves, but they would buy a book for friends or caregivers who are taking care of friends or family going through cancer. So we couldn't keep the book on the shelves.
Mm. Well, wonderful for you. And I'm sure it will be restocked quickly. Who is your publisher?
Cypress Health.
Okay.
Cypress Health Publishing. So if you go to the Amazon page, it's got Cypress Health there, and you can go to Cypress Health and order it as well. You can either order, of course, if you do that, you're not going to get all the free gifts that you would get on Amazon. And if you're listening to this, I want you to get those free gifts. Oh, they are just incredible. I mean, I would have paid for those gifts. I couldn't believe that my JV, my joint venture people in the launch were giving this stuff away for free. They were amazing.
Well, let's back up and talk about faith. You used that word earlier, and certainly you must have invested a lot of faith in your spirit guides to take such an assertive stand with your doctors. What role did faith play in your healing and recovery?
Well, in my healing, I remember when I didn't know what to do while I was going to treatment. The books that I read on cancer and cancer treatment scared the bejabbers out of me. I remember taking one book that was it was a whole book about hints and things to do while you're going through treatment from other people who had completed treatment, and I was about five pages in when I was crying so hard and so frightened that I threw it in the trash, and I vowed I would not write a book like that. So when it came time for me to do my meditations, I wanted to do meditations that would really apply to healing. And I remember my guide coming into my meditation and guiding me, giving me a guided meditation. And I wrote it down when I came out of the meditation, and it's in my book. And it was extremely helpful. And I found that if I meditated at night before I went to sleep, it calmed my whole body down because, David, my blood pressure, which is normally 117 over 72 during treatment, popped up to 159 over 94. I had to actually go to an ophthalmologist and make sure that I was not blowing the retinas out of my eyes. It was that bad. I was that scared. And so when I could hear the blood swishing in my ears at night when I would go to sleep, because another thing that I didn't mention, but it is in my book, my mother had died of cancer 6 months before I was diagnosed. I knew what death by cancer looked like, and it was not pretty. And so I knew what I could possibly be in for, and it scared the hell out of me. So when I would try to go to sleep at night, I'd be too frightened to sleep. I couldn't control my thoughts. Couldn't control my mind. So I would say the Lord's Prayer to calm me down, just sort of like this long mantra that didn't leave any room for my mind to jabber away. And then I would go into my meditations, which are in my book, and I found that if I fell asleep while I was meditating, I fell asleep in a state of grace that would keep me safe, and it opened up the doors and windows to my guides coming in to give me more guidance during my sleep. So the only thing that my guides and I really had to work on was my dream language, making sure that I could understand what they were saying to me. Because, you know, we're talking about celestial beings, more or less, and they're coming down onto the earth plane through our dreams to speak to us, and it's like we are nursery school children. So we have to learn their language, and they're trying their best to speak to us on a level that we can understand with a very limited vocabulary. So, yeah, it's tricky, but it's very doable. And once you learn their language and they learn how to speak to you, because it's a very symbiotic relationship as far as learning goes, it's amazing what you can do. You can start manifesting on the earth plane like nothing you've ever seen, because you know they're behind you, they're talking to you at night, they know what you want, need, and they know you have to ask them. That's another thing, David. The rule of asking, the rule of permission, without asking them to do something for you, they really cannot do it. And so that rule of permission that I go into in my book is so important. It is part of intention and the beginning of manifesting.
Now, are you specific in your asking?
I am. I said, let's get up to the top of the Amazon bestsellers list. I should have said, let's become a number one bestseller.
There you go.
There you go. Yep. You know, my language, be really, if you want the sun, say, I want the sun. Be real specific.
If I just
wanted to be a bestseller, and I was.
There you go. Now, do you add, when you say something specific, do you add the phrase or something better?
No, I tell them specifically what I want. Maybe I should say or something better, but I might not know what better is if I don't know to ask for it. And it's quite possible that many of us ask for better and we get it, but don't even know we got it. And I'm sure that happens
true.
A lot, and our guides sit back and just laugh away.
Well, the reason I say that is that's something that they advocate at the church I belong to, which is Unity Church. And also, you know, God knows no limits. So if you're specific in your requests and you place a limit on it, it's almost like you're putting a limit on God. So I try to add on to it praying for this, that, or the other thing or something better, to leave it wide open to experience whatever abundance may come my way.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. I thought I'd put that out there to the universe because a lot of people may be restricting themselves and not aware that absolute abundance is out there waiting for everybody. And it really has a lot to do with mindset and the power of affirmative prayer, I believe. That's something that I've learned in recent years. And so I will, before I say amen, I will proclaim, and it is so. So that's just part of my spiritual practice. I'd like to go way back to the beginning and ask you what your early religious and spiritual life looked like.
Well, that life was really in Germany because, remember, I'm a military brat. My dad was a Green Beret, and my mother was a military nurse. So they were both orphans, and as orphans, they were raised in orphanages that were run by nuns and Catholic brothers. So they had a very strong Catholic upbringing, but they didn't really impress that much on me. There were two religious churches you could go to in Germany, Catholic and Protestant. And I was more comfortable in the Catholic church. So I went to catechism with all of my girlfriends on Saturdays, and I went to Catholic church with them on Sundays. But other than that, I was never forced to go to church. And, you know, we always blessed our food before we ate it at home, which I think is one of the things that we have lost as we've gotten older. And by blessing our food, I think we actually can physically change it to be more nourishing and better.
Mm-hmm.
And so now what I do is I try, if nothing else, if it's quick or whatever, I just say, God, please bless this food to make it of the highest and best for me. And something as quick as that can make all the difference in the world. So, you know, my father was always for the underdog. When the Berlin Wall went up, he lived in Berlin. He went over into East Berlin to count Russian tanks and to bring the students from the West back who had gone over to the East for the university, bring them back through tunnels. So I grew up in a family that was always for the underdog, was always into helping others, was always into healing, was not big on religion, but they also never argued with authority, never bucked authority. So the fact that I was willing to go and stand up to my doctors when they said, your health would go home, come back in 6 months, and I said, no, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving here. I'm staying right here, and you're going to have to call security to drag me out. That was probably one of the biggest differences between my parents and myself. They would have gone home. They did go home. My parents both died of cancer. I didn't. I wouldn't go home.
Good for you. You know, when you were talking about blessing the food, I think another important thing that many of us take for granted or overlook is gratitude. And I know now, more often than not, when I'm ready to receive food, I express gratitude for it. There's so many people in this world that go hungry. And I think that Oprah Winfrey made it very clear that when we express gratitude, it attracts more towards us. We live in a vibrational universe, as Esther Hicks would say, and what we put out, we receive. You know, you reap what you sow. So it's important to stay in a place of positivity, I believe, and to be grateful and count every single blessing. Even if we feel like we're at a very impoverished point of our life or that things are not going at all our way, we have our breath, we have rest, we have food, we have a roof over our head, hopefully. There's so many little things that we take for granted that we should be grateful for. So I just wanted to put that out there. What was your early concept of God about?
My early concept of God was more an energy. I never really saw God as that bearded guy up there. I just saw him more or less as the guy in charge, I guess, is the best way to say it. The guy in charge. I didn't really have a face or anything, although I did. I believed in angels. I didn't see them as people flying around with wings. What I did see was them as big balls of energy. I had seen them a few times in my dreams. So I always saw angels as big balls of energy, and I could feel them more than see them. But I believe we all have, like I said, we all have angels and spirit guides, and we're their job.
How do you think people can get in touch with their spirit guides?
Oh, dreams. Absolutely. Meditation, mm-hmm. prayer, but through our dreams are the doorways to the other side. It's like our ET, our eternal teacher, phones home to the other side for help, and somebody always answers the phone. It's amazing. And so that statement in itself is what I am going to be taking with me to the IASD, the International Association for the Study of Dreams, in Berkeley, California, where 600 doctors from around the world are going to be coming to a symposium to listen to presenters. And I am going to be presenting with a Dr. Larry Burke, who did this incredible study on dreams that diagnose breast cancer. And I was one of the people he did the study on. And we are going to be presenting to doctors around the world the importance of dreams and higher power in finding cancer. So, you know, the way you connect with that higher power, with your spirit guides, with your guardian angels, is through your dreams. Our dreams diagnose our life.
What would you say to people that don't remember their dreams?
Well, everything dreams, and I'm going to give you really five really quick ways to remember your dreams right now, but don't go running for a piece of paper and a pencil. All you have to do is actually go to my website at www.survivingcancerland.com, and you can download the 7 steps to access, awaken, and activate your inner guide. It's what I'm telling you right now is in there. So just download that for free. It's free. And it will help you remember your dreams. First of all, verbally voice your intention to remember your dream before you go to sleep at night. Remember, we were talking about intention earlier. It's so important for manifesting, and you want to manifest remembering your dreams. The second thing to remember is that early morning dreams are the easiest ones to remember. So keep a notebook right beside your bed. And when you awaken, write down what you do remember, whatever it is. If you're still having trouble remembering, lie back down in the bed in the same position you were in when you woke up and try to remember anything at all. And the reason it's so important to keep that notebook by your bed is because if you have to get up and run around the room looking for something to write on, you're going to forget your dream. The third thing is, if the dream is still really elusive, write down your feelings when you first woke up. Were you happy, sad, frightened, content? Write them down. They're important. Then write down any colors that pop into your head while you're trying to remember that dream. And then give your dream a title, no matter what it is, even if it's the dream without a name, the dream I could not remember. Because during the day, at some point, you may remember a part of that dream, a snippet of that dream. It could even be during a daydream. And then you can write down what you remembered on anything at all. My dream book has receipts written, you know, dreams written on receipts, toilet paper, napkins, and tape to my dream journal. Do the same thing. Write it down on anything. And when you get home, tape it to your dream journal. And that's how you're going to start remembering your dreams. You're going to train yourself not to forget.
Wow. That's some very good advice. I'm going to have to keep that in mind because I'm the sort of person that has difficulty remembering my dreams, except for those early morning dreams that you talked about. How has your concept of God evolved over the years?
It hasn't really evolved that much, David. What it has done is the crises that I've had to go through have just made me realize how important God is. You know, sometimes we forget that science is a gift from God. Science is not something you worship. So science goes so far, like in my case, science went so far, and then came God. So to a degree, my book and my message is showing the medical community just that. Science goes so far, and then comes God. So don't worship the science. Worship God that gave you that gift. Because unfortunately, you know, that higher power, that God, is being taken out of so much right now. It's being taken out of schools. It's being taken out of society. It's being taken out of the public. And people are finding that they're lost because they're putting all of their belief and their hope in science. Science has the answers, yeah, but that's because they were given to science by a higher power, and they're just discovering what's already there from somewhere else and something much higher and bigger.
Well, it sounds like you place God at a supreme role in your life.
Oh, I do. And I remember when I was diagnosed a second time, and I was so angry, David. Oh, my goodness. I was lying on the bed, and I fell asleep, and my guides came in through a pop-up. And when I saw them, I let loose on them. You know, I am a human being. I do have emotions, and so I'm allowed to yell and scream at my guides. And I told them, I said, look, I know I'm dying. I'm in stage 4 recurrence. So you tell God that when I get up there, and I know I'm coming pretty soon, he better be prepared because I am pissed. Why would I have to have cancer twice? Like, once wasn't enough. I've got to go through this crap again. And I remember my guides were looking at me, and they said, Kathy, don't you remember? I said, remember what? And they said, before you were born, you said you wanted to come down onto the earth plane during a time when higher power was being taken out of everything. And you were going to show that science goes so far and then comes God. And we told you we would be with you every step of the way. And we have. And I said that? And they said, yes. And I said, what the heck was I smoking up there at that time? And they started laughing. If you're one of the few times I've actually seen them laugh. And I said, well, then don't leave me. And they said, we won't. And so I knew at that point that I was not going to die. I was there on a mission I had decided upon before I was born, and I was fulfilling my life purpose, and I was in the right direction for my life's destiny.
That's beautiful. Kathy, do you mind if we take Do you mind if we take a short commercial break for my latest book?
Not at all. I would love to hear about it.
Thank you. Okay, well, here goes. This is Shades of Gay by David Clark.
Prepare to be shocked. Prepare to be moved. Prepare to laugh. Prepare to cry. And prepare to be inspired. Dive into David Clark's latest book, Shades of Gay, and you will find yourself plunged into the trenches of sexual addiction. You will embark upon a kaleidoscopic tour from the abyss to higher ground. In the beginning, it was love at first sight when Daniel and Mark met, but through the years, that same love became tainted. Daniel, an alcoholic and sex addict, has found himself unable to resist the lure of other men. When Mark discovers his infidelity, he leaves Daniel, who begins a dark descent into sexual tryst after tryst. Shades of Gay reveals the myriad desires a lost man can permit his body and soul to revel in, despite the pain they bring. But can such fleeting moments of pleasure bring meaning to life? Will Daniel realize the love he had with Mark is worth more than the sweat spent in other men's beds?
And Shades of Gay by David Clark is available on Amazon.com and has received all 5 out of 5 star reviews. We're speaking tonight with Kathleen O'Keefe Canavos, who is not only a breast cancer survivor 3 times around, but she is a thriver. And I think there's a big difference between those two things, because it's true that that which we survive that doesn't kill us makes us stronger. But I think the real meaning of life is to thrive and to fully embrace life and to embody it. It's a supreme gift that we've all been given, and that certainly is what Kathy has done. We've talked a little bit about her faith and how her spirit guides alerted her to the fact that she had cancer when her doctor said no, even when it recurred and it was stage 4 cancer. She's 10 years away from that. So I just want to ask you a couple of parting questions. How important have support groups been in your recovery?
Well, you know, it's interesting, David. I did not go to support groups when I was going through my breast cancer and my breast cancer recurrence any of the times, because I didn't find them helpful for me. Other people have had great results from them, and I do help other support groups. But in my case, there was so much sadness in there for me, and I was trying to stay so positive. I just found that it wasn't a need I had. And it's not that I don't believe they're helpful, because I believe they are very, very helpful. I just found that they were not helpful for me, because I am such a sensitive person, and because I am such a bright light, I tended to attract their pain too much. They would come to me, they would cry, they would tell me just horror stories, you know, and I was at a point when I was going through my treatment where I couldn't hear that. And I remember one of the strongest and number one rules in my book that I talk about is when someone would come up to me and want to share a story, the first question out of my mouth was, does this story have a happy ending? And if the answer was, well, no, they died, I'd say, I don't want to hear it. Go tell it to my husband. If it's really important, something I need to know, you go tell him. Because hearing that somebody fought and fought and fought and then didn't survive is not something you want to focus on. You want to focus on the people who survived stage 4, the people who survived multiple cancers, the people who went from survivor to thriver. Those are the stories you want to focus on and listen to. The rest of them are not going to be helpful.
That is a very strong message that I would encourage people to listen to. It is so important what we feed into our brains and psyches, and we need to remain hopeful. And so thank you for sharing that. What would you say to women that are at the beginning of the cancer journey? Any words of advice?
Yeah, go and get my book. This is such a book, you need to read it. You know, read it before you meet it, because it is going to guide you successfully through all of the steps of going through treatment and going from a survivor into a thriver. And that's what you want to do. It's not going to scare you. It does not talk about failure. I do not focus on failure. I only focus on success.
Well, thank you, Kathy. It's been a joy to have you with us tonight. You're an inspiration. It's no wonder you're an inspirational speaker. You have such a positive outlook on life. You have such strong faith. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, David. This has been a wonderful hour we've spent together, and I hope your listeners, will find information in this hour that will help them through any crisis, whether it's health, wealth, or relationships.
I think that's one thing that you have hit on in many different ways, is that we don't need to be specific to cancer to benefit from this program. This program has been a light that can provide inspiration for people going through whatever kind of crisis. And I would encourage them to go to Kathy's website to get the information on dreams and the importance that dreams can reveal in terms of bringing you to a better place in this life. So thank you again, and I hope and wish you nothing but the best success. And for people that have been listening to this that would like to hear it again, there are a few places you can go to listen to the podcast. The easiest place to go to is freespiritbroadcasting.com. Just click on David Clark, and it will bring up all of my radio shows you can choose from. And Kathy's will be at the top. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.